All right. Does that work? I think that works, but I'm not sure. My camera is stuck, so let's try that again. All right, but the camera is stuck. Let's redo this. A video capture device. Why is my video? There, huh? It's weird. All right, now audio can go, but my video is stuck. So not sure what's going on. Let's see. Let's try doing it from this side. Okay, still not coming through, so let's get rid of this and add video capture. Yeah, there we go. Done. Okay, hopefully that worked. Okay, yay. I think I got it. I'm not sure. Okay, all right. Sorry about that. Something about my setup is just off a little bit right now, and I'm not sure exactly what it is. Anyway, I think you guys can hear me now, and you can see me, and we can do all of this now. So, hopefully, no more hiccups. Anyway, welcome to Bitcoin Tech Talk. This is a show that I do every Monday. I send out my newsletter, Bitcoin Tech Talk, every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Central time. Anyway, this is the show where I review all the stuff that's been going on in Bitcoin in the past week. I usually have a long read and go through my tweets and so on. So anyway, without further ado, since I did delay and getting the show started, right? Just the markets have gone crazy. We've been on lockdown. People are socially distancing, and grocery stores are very popular, but pretty much everything else is not. One of the things that's obvious is that Bitcoin is not the only volatile asset in this turbulent time. It's like pretty much everything is turbulent. S&P is going up and down, Dow is going up and down, gold's going up and down. It's kind of a crazy, crazy time. Anyway, Coinmetrics has published an article on talking about where the actual sell-off came from, and they examined a bunch of coins and who actually sold and so on. BTC sellers appear to be mostly be short-term holders, and this is what we've been suspecting, is that there's a lot of leverage traders, a lot of liquidations, possibly hedge funds that had to liquidate and so on. And that's what we're seeing in this article, which is that there's a lot of supply that or there isn't that much like revived supply that got destroyed and so on. And it's a great article talking about holders and who's actually selling and so on. It looks like anybody that was super leveraged on BitMEX got absolutely wrecked. And And, you know, they a lot of people in other currencies as well. But yeah, this is a very good overview of everything, including like the, you know, unscheduled maintenance and so on. The big winners out of this seem to be, one loser is obviously Adaptive Capital. They are closing down operations following this crash. This is, I think, Murad's, hedge fund, but they got absolutely destroyed as a result of what happened with the markets and Bitcoin. Other than that, the big winner seems to be stablecoins. And this is the Messari stablecoin index. And if you look at it on like a 3-month time scale, you can see that it's been steadily trending, been trending up since the crisis started. So there's a significant amount of people that are coming into stablecoins. Now, the thing about most of these stablecoins, other than, you know, crap like DAI or whatever, is that they have to be fully backed, or they're supposed to be fully backed. We're not really sure about Tether. But stuff like USDC and, you know, Paxos Coin and others, they're supposed to be fully backed. And if they are fully backed, that means this is new money entering. That means that people want to keep it in these, and they're waiting for the bottom or something in order to get in and you know, like do something with it, whether it's buying Bitcoin or other securities. This is an interesting thing to look at, because it is like, billions of dollars that are coming into the space. Giacomo Zucco has come out with a 2-part series on privacy. These are fairly long reads, but both of these articles are well worth reading. The first one is about a match made in the white paper, and money needs privacy. You need these properties like deniability, fungibility. Bitcoin was born for privacy, and privacy is really kind of an all or nothing kind of thing. And you really do have to think about fungibility. And in the second article, it's all about like sort of bad ways to do privacy, including using another coin, and why these fallacies like privacy will get you in trouble, or you don't need to worry about privacy, or using some privacy coin. These are all sort of fallacies or bad things, and you need to think about privacy in a much better way. And I really like this area, this part of the article. What really matters are incentives, and this is absolutely true, because you need an anonymity set to hide privacy in, and these altcoins that have supposed privacy, they have tiny anonymity sets. What you want are good anonymity sets, and the only way to get really good anonymity sets is for you to have large economic incentives to use it, and that's something that I think will come on as we get stuff like cross input aggregation. All right, Peter Woolley has summed up like anti-covert channel signing techniques. This was from a couple weeks ago, but there have been more comments in the last week or so. But basically, the summary here is pretty excellent. Let's see, we have to go down all the way over here. Yeah, so here are the 6 different issues and levels of security. So predictable K. So if you leak your K in any sort of signature, you lose your private key. Replay attacks, K0 grinding, statefulness, failure bias, and side channel attacks. You can't optimize for D, E, and F. A, B, and C are pretty much, that's reasonable to just sort of implement. D, E, and F have trade-offs between each other, so you have to be kind of careful. Tim Ruffing, Russell O'Connor, Marco Bencun, they all commented on the different concerns. So you have to think about key generation. You can use unhardened child derivations to mitigate against certain types of attacks for key generation. And most hardware wallets, at least at this point, allow you to enter your own seed. So there are ways to add that. All right. Lightning, if you need help with your Lightning node, there's an interesting forum for discussion here. This is really interesting, not necessarily because of, you know, the website or whatever. I mean, you can search for, practical help in setting up your Lightning node or whatever. The interesting thing about this website is that there's no login. You can post directly using the identity of your Lightning node. So Lightning is being used in an interesting way as a way to authenticate, because all of that needs to happen anyway on the Lightning network. So there are these things that are being built on top on top of the Lightning network in order to make it more useful for other things. So private messaging is one of those things. I think I've shared that on this show multiple times. But the other thing is stuff like this. You can have a website where, you know, you don't need to create an account or a login or anything. You just have a Lightning node, and it's very hard to Sybil because you need to lock up some money in order to be on the network. So, you know, it's really interesting. I hope stuff like this becomes much more prominent, because it is very important that, you know, we have decentralized methods of logging in and so on. SparkSwap is shutting down. So they were trying to make an exchange using Lightning and so on. And Trey Griffith wrote this letter about, why it's basically... why it didn't work and so on. But basically, there were a sort of like a decentralized, like Lightning using exchange. It turned out that the market just wasn't ready for it, right? Like, there aren't that many people running their own Lightning nodes and wanting the security of having that. What traders tend to care a lot more about is leverage and being able to trade much more quickly and having liquidity and so on. All right, the Federal Reserve continues to be aggressive in all sectors of the market, and this isn't even including what they announced last night, which is basically unlimited QE. But they're providing liquidity to corporate bonds, mortgage-backed securities, municipal bonds, and now student loan securities. Let's see, what's the other ones? Credit card securities and student loan, credit card, and car loans and small business loan securities. All of those are basically being guaranteed by the Fed at this point, or they are, quote unquote, providing liquidity, which means that they'll put them on their balance sheet in exchange, or allow loans against those assets, or at some point they'll probably start just buying them outright and putting them on their balance sheet. And of course, they're providing a lot of liquidity to a bunch of other central banks, which is something that we hadn't had before in previous bailouts and so on. This one is a little bit concerning to me. But basically, here's the actual announcement. The Federal Reserve on Thursday announced the establishment of temporary U.S. dollar liquidity arrangements, swap lines with the Reserve Bank of Australia, Banco Central of Brazil, Denmark's National Bank, Bank of Korea, Bank of Mexico, Norway, New Zealand, Singapore, Sweden, all of those central banks. Some of them are getting about $60 billion in liquidity, and another bunch are getting $30 billion. So that means that anytime these guys want to buy more dollars, they'll make it liquid. So they can print their own money and swap it for the money that the U.S. central bank is printing, and that way they can keep the peg to the dollar instead of running out of reserves. This is a way to keep their reserves and keep the peg and keep things in a steady range. This is something that hasn't been done before. And if you add all those numbers up, this is about half a trillion dollars, right? Like, that's a lot of money that's going towards other central banks and bailing those economies out. So all of this is to say that there's money printer go brr. This is a new meme. basically, you know, the Fed continues to print, and this has become popular recently. But this is the website if you're... Yeah, so it's kind of hilarious that this is a thing, but that's how, you know, I mean, it's kind of true, and this is probably one of the best things to come out of this crisis is the money printer go brr meme. The story of the Venezuelan petro and the futility of political cryptocurrency can be seen in this article. So, I mean, I don't normally recommend Nathaniel Popper stuff, but this is, wow, what a read this was. And he's a very good writer, but... The entire story about how Mr. Jimenez, I think it was Gabriel Jimenez, he's like a 27-year-old gentleman that, you know, was tapped to create the Petro. He was against the Maduro regime, but, you know, he tried to help them out, and they basically, you know, made the Petro into whatever they wanted. And he almost went to prison. You know, he lost his business and everything else. So, really interesting read. It's about the futility of idealistic coders that are trying to create new, you know, print money for somebody else, essentially. And this is a sad story of most ICOs, is that usually there's somebody that wants to print their own money, gets an idealistic coder to help them, and the coder ends up being kind of disillusioned afterwards. MakerDAO continues to have some trouble with the newest struggle, pegging the DAI to the dollar. So right now there's a flight to liquidity even in MakerDAO. Everyone wants the DAI so they can pay back their loans, which is creating an incentive for DAI. But in order for that peg to stay, you need more people converting to DAI. And there's supposed to be an arbitrage opportunity, but everyone's scared that Ethereum will fall. So as a result, what you're having is a bunch of people that want to liquidate, but then they have to pay a premium in order to do so, like a 10% premium on the DAI. This image is hilarious. This is Vitalik Buterin's Road to Ethereum 2.0. And it is just a gigantic mess. And you can see, like, just how many things need to happen. And I love these boxes over here. Implementation. As if the design itself is the hard part. No, it's the implementation. It's the actual running of the thing that's hard. And he would know that if he were a real software developer. Instead, he's sort of like what he called, bills himself as the high priest of Ethereum. He just sort of issues decrees and expects everyone to follow. But yeah, this whole diagram is, you know, hilarious because it's like 5-10 years out. And given that they change their narrative every few months, what's going to happen is this will be revised at least 100 times before it sees the light of day. Anyway, there's a lot of hidden significant risks in pretty much anything Ethereum related, and we're seeing that now, especially in stuff like DAI. Justin Sun looks like he may have to write off his acquisition of Steam. So basically, this is ForkLog, and Steam community will launch a Hive hard fork to get rid of Justin Sun. So he basically, you know, bought the Steam company, and it looks like the community doesn't like that he's doing something. Vitalik wrote this tweet saying, you know, like, hey, I really hope they succeed. And Justin Sun's like, well, I hope Ethereum Classic succeeds, which was in itself hilarious. But they're going to split into Steam and Hive. And basically Hive's, you know, doing an airdrop to all current Steam owners. So anyway, it's an interesting thing. I expect them to split it again and again, just kind of like BCH did. Crypto communities, you know, I mean, like, once you centralize, you're going to keep splitting because there's nothing holding you back to keep it centralized. So that's what I suspect will happen, kind of like what's happening with BCH and many others. All right. So if you like my newsletter, you might like my two books. Please pound that like button and you know, subscribe if you haven't. Here's the Little Bitcoin book, which you can go buy on Amazon. And of course, here's the Programming Bitcoin book, which you can also buy on Amazon. All right. So some other things that let's go through my Twitter feed because at least one tweet was extremely controversial. I got ratioed on something that got 1,000 likes, which is not normal. Anyway, so let's go through some of the tweets that I did. All right. So as you can see, I've been tweeting a lot since I've been stuck at home. I'm sure this is true of many of you that have Twitter accounts. Some really bad precedents being set right now. Most people won't complain because they're fearful for their safety. This is how government gains more and more power. Do not let the fear blind you to what you're giving up. Temporary powers have a way of becoming permanent. And this is definitely true in China, in many other places where people basically can't leave their house. It's a little bit concerning because, you know, you do this once, you've more or less given them permission to do it, given the same basis. So as long as it's declared an emergency, you are to stay at home. And that's very, very dangerous, because those powers can become permanent real quick and be abused real quick. A healthy skepticism of what propaganda arms tell you, news especially, is an essential part of being a sovereign individual. Verify, don't trust. Bitcoin should have taught you this. And this is especially true of almost anything that the government puts out. There are people on Twitter saying, the masks actually are useful, even if you're completely healthy or if you have the virus, either way. But the government was telling you one thing, right? Stuff like that, you have to be very, very careful about what you're consuming. You should verify things for yourself. If only X did Y, everything would be okay, where X is not yourself. This rapidly becomes, let's force X to do Y. That is precisely the kind of cure that's worse than the disease. I'm hearing a lot on Twitter about people that are basically saying, let's force everyone to do X. Let's force X people to do Y. This is exactly how you get totalitarianism, and that's what I was warning against. Turns out it wasn't a very popular tweet. All right, most popular tweet of the week was the question I hope everyone will soon ask. If the government can just print money, why do we pay taxes at all? Going down that rabbit hole will eventually lead them to Bitcoin. So the government can run deficits. They can print money, essentially. It's not exactly printing money. What they do is they issue treasuries, and if not enough people buy them, the Fed will buy them as a backstop because they're the lender of last resort. But if the government can print money, why do we pay taxes at all? This got heavy retweets and a lot of likes, but it is a question that we should all be asking because the government is about to print $4, $5, $6, $7 trillion in the next few months. What's going to happen, right? Why are we paying taxes? And this is something that I think people will be asking very, very quickly. Think about how worthless fiat money is. Most people are willing to use toilet paper and frozen pizza as stores of value than more than dollars. Hodlers know. It's just something that's obvious is that people are hoarding these other things rather than dollars. And it's a little bit of a sarcastic tweet. Obviously, they're not really using it for store value. It's just that most people are finding that more valuable right now. Every transaction has a cost. Right now, everyone is flying to liquidity. It's too bad that the most liquid asset is also one of the most expansionary. Imagine how much more efficient everything would be if the most liquid asset was also the most scarce. So this is the thing about the current fiat system that I don't think a lot of people get is that when you fly into liquidity, well, you're getting diluted every time the Fed prints more money. If that money was also pretty scarce, then you'd have basically like the gold standard. And during those times, you don't need to go and find all these other stores of value in order to make things better. And that's the essence of my tweet and the essence of what I'm talking about. You want to be sure to create that situation where, you know, the store of value and the... Oh, sorry. It looks like All right. Sorry. Technical problems again. Give me 1 second. Let me see if I can figure it out. That is the wrong description. All right. Sorry. All right, let's go back to getting my video capture device. Where is that? Oh, all right. Well, okay. You guys won't be able to see my face. All right. So there, every transaction has a cost. Everyone's flying to liquidity, and the US dollar is expansionary, but Bitcoin is not. And that's why Bitcoin's a better money, and that's why I think it'll win. There's a lot of new money flowing into stablecoins, is something that I already mentioned, around $1 billion in the past week or so. So a lot of it is probably waiting for Bitcoin to bottom. So I think we're poised for a really nice bull market if things currently hold. Most of us haven't been in a war economy, but I bet the authoritarian restrictions, insane spending, and abundant propaganda are similar. Intended or not, this is an excellent dress rehearsal for a world war. There's something to be said about, restrictions and voluntary, separation and things like that. But the authoritarian nature of pretty much every country right now, this is what war probably feels like. I'm grateful for this time. I get to work out, spend time with family, cook my own meals, code in peace, and engage with the world on my terms through the internet. If you have fear and anxiety, the best antidote is gratitude and appreciation. Just hopefully a positive note that you can take. Remember 8 weeks ago when you were in an existential crisis about what you should do with your life and what impact you wanted to have on the world? Yeah, I certainly do. It's kind of crazy how everything changes in 8 weeks. In Bitcoin, in 2020, Bitcoin will have expanded by less than 2.5%. The Fed has already printed $700 billion, $500 billion, $1 trillion. It's like 14.2% of M2 money. It's a lot more than that, given a lot of other stuff that's happened since then. Good entrepreneurs are thinking about what sorts of goods and services will be in demand once the quarantines lift. And that's something that you should be thinking about if you're thinking about it. I talked about the foreign central banks being, the U.S. Basically making it possible for those central banks to print more of their own money. 6 month treasuries are now negative. What does this mean? The market thinks there's monetary contraction coming and that the rate of contraction is higher than the negative rate, which is really scary, but true. And that means that the Congress and Fed will have to print a significant amount in order to offset the contraction. We don't have free markets. They're constantly being interfered with through liquidity injections, open markets, operations, circuit breakers, and regulations. Free the markets. Can't be more obvious than all the circuit breakers that are happening in all of these markets and market close and the Fed constantly intervening and everything. And each thing seems to send it even lower, which is kind of crazy. Aliens watching this whole thing would say that the human race is incredibly anxious, docile, and manipulable and ripe for takeover and substitute aliens for authorities, and it's obvious why they keep getting away with what they're doing. The authorities keep putting more and more restrictions on us, and we're kind of taking it, honestly, and that's pretty concerning to me. When did panic become a virtue signal? Right now, it seems to be. Looks like even more money printing, adding liquidity, this time for cities and companies. These are muni and corporate bonds that are being backstopped by the Federal Reserve. So it looks like what you can do if you are a dealer of those is that you can turn those in and get a loan based on those with the Federal Reserve. And that means that you get newly, freshly printed money in exchange for those, or and they'll take that as collateral, basically, at par value. So you can get some insanely good rates, and that adds, they're basically the buyer of last resort for munis and corporate bonds at this point, which is really concerning as well. Stay power being exercised the past week or so. People forced to stay at home, no gatherings of more than 10 people, restrictions on what you can buy, what you can sell, wealth diluted through lavish money printing. How come no one is protesting? This is, I'm going to beat this drum to death, but basically it's kind of crazy just how much people are laying down for that. An even simpler question, if the government can take care of all of us through deficit spending, why does anyone need to work? Yeah, it's another question. Tally so far, $700 billion open market operations, $1 trillion overnight repo, $450 billion foreign central bank support, $1 trillion fiscal stimulus and bailout, some amount for bond market support, some other amount for consumer markets, including student loans, car loans, credit card loans, and small business administration stuff. This is going to be a giant tally, and I think it's going to be way over $4 trillion, I think, but we'll see. Let's do the math. This was in response to one of the proposals in the House. In response to the coronavirus crisis, the Automatic Boost to Communities Act would immediately provide a U.S. debit card preloaded with $2,000 to every person in America. Each card would be recharged with $1,000 monthly until 1 year after the end of the coronavirus crisis, and they would fund this with $2 trillion platinum coins. Now you do the math, and that's like $3.6 trillion, and you print to $1 trillion coins, that's still a deficit of $1.6 trillion. So you're gonna need to print more $1 trillion coins, and this is exactly how you get hyperinflation. Reminder, you can own fractions of $1 trillion coins. Hopefully that was clever. All right, and this is the ratio tweet. 1,100 likes, 1,800 comments. This is I've never had a tweet go like this. But apparently, it triggered some people. It made it to a lot of different places. But this is my tweet. As a Christian, I'm disappointed at how nearly every church in the U.S. has closed and gone online due to the orders from government authorities. Now, if they did it before government ordered them and they were doing it for their congregation's sake, totally understand. That's totally within their prerogative. But there are a bunch that closed because they were ordered to do so. And that's what concerns me. Maybe they were leaning that way, but there should be at least some constitutional challenge because this is against the freedom of religion and freedom of assembly. I'm not saying that like every church should meet and like you should invite all the old people and stuff, but the idea is that if you're going to have restrictions on the government shouldn't be able to force restrictions on people in this way, especially when it comes to religion and freedom of assembly. And that's what I was talking about. Now, like everyone, there are so many people accusing me of not being a good Christian, a lot of people accusing me of being unloving and how people are dying, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not talking about that at all. I'm talking about the erosion of our civil liberties, right? Our freedoms are being taken away, right? Like these things have a way of becoming permanent. If you allow one exception, you end up allowing a lot more exceptions. And that's what I'm really concerned about. And this is another story that I found. The Department of Justice seeks new emergency powers amid coronavirus pandemic. And this one in particular is all about how the Department of Justice basically wants to put someone in detention during emergencies like coronavirus and say you don't have a right to a fair trial, which is kind of crazy. You indefinite detention is what communism, what happens in communism and so on. So, this is the sort of thing that, you have to be very, very careful about, letting in. All right. Let's see. I asked a couple of questions regarding the fiscal stimulus. How much should the U.S. government be giving to individuals? everyone wants free money. How should they fund them? The Fed should go brr. So basically, they want to take from everybody else through inflation. It's a little bit like you need to understand that whatever money the Fed prints, it's taking from current savers, and it's not taking from giant corporations. They're leveraged up to their eyeballs. It's taking from everybody else. There's no free lunch here. But class warfare seems to be what's happening here. All right, let's see. We don't rise to the level of our ideals. We fall to the level of our fear. This is a play on the quote, we don't rise to the level of our expectations. We fall to the level of our training. Basically, the more you fear, the more power and rights you're going to be giving away during times of crisis. So it's very important to be cognizant of the fear and not let yourself get carried away in that fear and, giving up all your powers to the government, basically. We have a new euphemism for house arrest, social distancing. I thought it was clever, but, people are still killing me for it, but yeah, whatever. Your options, inflation, shrinking savings, and undeserving politically connected companies prospering. Deflation, or option number two, deflation, increasing savings, and a free and fair market. I think the second one is what we should be going for. The Fed announced last week that they're buying corporate bonds and munis. This one is about student loans, auto loans, credit card loans, loans guaranteed by the Small Business Administration, and certain other assets. So the Fed is backstopping almost everything. This is unprecedented. The Fed's never done this before. Just like in 2008 when they started putting mortgage-backed securities onto their balance sheet, now they're starting to put all sorts of other securities, including corporate bonds, municipal bonds, student loan backed securities, and car loan backed securities, and many other things. This is going to get crazy. I'm telling you right now, the amount of money that's going to come into this economy is going to dwarf anything that we've seen before. And if you thought 2008 with a couple trillion dollars, which ended up being about 25% of the M2 money supply at the time, that's gonna look like nothing compared to now. Right now we're at 15.5 trillion as of February 2020. I'm gonna guess four trillion would be about even with 2008. I think it's gonna be way more than that. Like six trillion, I think, is like a pretty reasonable estimate at this point, and that would be like 37.5% or more, around 37.5 to 40% of the M2 money supply. Guys, you're gonna see this, who knows how long it'll take for it to dilute into the economy. But some people are gonna get very rich off of this. Most of us are going to suffer. All right, so that's about it for my tweets. Let's go to the long read, and I wanted to go to some of the Federal Reserve stuff because that's very interesting to me. I don't know how many of you are read the press releases from the Federal Reserve, but this was the Commercial Paper Funding Facility 2020 paper terms and conditions. The CPFF 2020 will be structured as a credit facility to a special purpose vehicle authorized under Section 13(3) of the Federal Reserve Act. The SPV will serve as a funding backstop to facilitate the issuance of term commercial paper by eligible issuers. All right, so what's this talking about? This is basically commercial paper or corporate bonds. And this is something that a lot of companies use in order to, stay liquid and so on. They need to pay their suppliers, so they'll issue a short-term bond, often 3 months or less, in order to pay those off. But then they have to pay it back with interest, and then sometimes they'll roll over these. It's essentially a way to stay in business, and to leverage up a lot of their production capacity, which is basically what every company does these days, instead of the old-fashioned way, which is use the profits to reinvest in your business and then add production capacity and use the markets, and so the market tells you whether or not you've made it in sufficient quantity and so on. Instead, we have these hyper leveraged companies that are using stuff like commercial paper. So anyway, here's what the Fed will do. The SPV will purchase from eligible issuers 3-month U.S. dollar-denominated commercial paper through the New York Fed's primary dealers. Eligible issuers are U.S. issuers of commercial paper, including U.S. issuers with a foreign parent company. So this means that any dollar-denominated company can issue these bonds. And basically, they're being backstopped by the Fed. So they'll lend out against these. So instead of a dealer that wants to get rid of them, they can just give them to the Fed as collateral and borrow dollars against them. So there's no need for liquidating these bonds. Essentially, they're taking down the sell pressure on these. These should be going down to zero because these companies are not doing any business whatsoever right now in large part because of the crisis that we're in. So no one's, going and buying, going to restaurants, for example. So if you have a bond or whatever, there are certain standards. You have to be rated at a particular amount. And there are certain limits, but this is what the Fed is doing. It's a commercial funding facility. The other one is the mortgage-backed securities. And this one is... this is a dealer credit facility. Collateral, this investment grade corporate debt security. So not just commercial paper, which is short term, 3 months, but anything longer, they can use this other facility. International agency securities, commercial paper, municipal securities. So these are muni bonds, mortgage backed securities, and asset backed securities plus equity securities. So you can get loans against them instead of selling. Right, they are reducing the selling pressure by backstopping all of these financial derivatives. And they're guaranteeing money market funds. This is in 2008, one of the things that happened that threw chaos into the markets was that money markets were returning negative. And if you have that, then no one wants to go into the money markets and everyone, starts taking out cash. So it's basically the same sort of dynamics that happen with negative interest rates. So in order to do that, they are providing liquidity to money market mutual funds. They're lending to eligible borrowers, taking as collateral certain types of assets. So once again, they're using the same facility. Basically, you can get a loan from the Federal Reserve at extremely low rates and use these as collateral. So instead of selling, what you do is you lend them to the Federal Reserve, and you get dollars in return. And this is how more money is being printed as well. And of course, I already went into the other central banks. There's also a newer one. So if we go to the press releases for this one's from this morning. Let's see. This one's from this morning, announces technical change to support economy, FOMC statement, new extensive new measures. So this is a list of the new measures that the Fed is doing in order to, Federal Reserve's role is guided by its mandate from Congress to promote maximum employment and stable prices, along with its responsibilities to promote the stability of the financial system. In support of these goals, the Federal Reserve is using its full range of authorities to provide the powerful support for the flow of credit to American families and businesses. These actions include support for critical market functioning. The Federal Open Market Committee will purchase Treasury securities and agency-backed securities in the amounts needed to support smooth market functioning and effective transmission of monetary policy. Now, this was already announced last week, right? $500 billion of Treasuries and $200 billion of mortgage-backed securities. In addition, the FOMC will include purchases of agency commercial mortgage-backed securities in its agency mortgage-backed security purchases. So this is to sort of not break precedent. So they're not outright buying other stuff yet, but they are allowing loans for commercial paper and munis and you know, student loan assets and all this other stuff, which is later down here. Support the flow of credit to employers, consumers, and businesses by establishing new programs that, taken together, will provide up to $300 billion in new financing. The Department of Treasury, using the Exchange Stabilization Fund, will provide $30 billion in equity to these facilities. So apparently, there's all these businesses will get quick loans through the Department of Treasury. Establishment of two facilities to support credit to large companies, the primary market corporate and secondary market corporate credit facility to provide liquidity to outstanding corporate bonds. So new bond and loan issuance and the currently existing one. So they're providing liquidity to these bond markets, again, by ostensibly allowing people to take out loans based on the collateral of these bonds that already exist. Term asset securities loan facilities. These are the student loan, auto loan, credit card loan, loans guaranteed by the Small Business Administration. I already went through that. Facilitating the flow of credit to municipalities by extending the money market mutual fund liquidity facility to include wider range of securities, including municipal variable rate demand notes and bank certificates of deposit. So they're backstopping almost everything that they can. Facilitating the flow of credit to municipalities by expanding the commercial paper funding facility. So, I mean, the combination of these things is literally like we've never had this with the Fed. The Fed has not ever done this much in order to, you know, try to, oh gosh. All right. So I got to get rid of that one. And then I have to add this other one. Video capture device. Said that's not working. Video capture device and add a new source. Yeah, there we go. All right, there we go. Sorry about that. But basically, the Fed is doing some insane amount of backstopping. Really, it's money printing in a different form, but because these securities would be going down. Instead, they're providing liquidity by allowing all these places to lend against it or borrow against it. So as a result, they're able to liquidate their holdings without actually liquidating them, or they have the liquidity without actually selling. And this is what the Federal Reserve is doing. They're not allowing prices to come down. And they're artificially putting their thumb on the scale instead of allowing the market to contract, which is what should be happening at this point. They're keeping it inflated. And as a result, a lot of zombie and sick companies will continue to operate use resources that could be better going towards, you know, entrepreneurs and companies that are doing well. So anyway, that hopefully gives you an idea of just sort of the insanity that we're going through. The disruption economically is just absolutely insane, and what you're going to see in the next few months is just you know, like, there is going to be so much money pumped into this, and the Fed is going to end up lending out, like adding so much money into the economy as a result of all of these facilities. In particular, a lot of these illiquid bonds will essentially end up on the Fed's balance sheet if they can't pay it back. So it's going to become an interesting series of events, and I can't imagine this ending with anything less than a lot of price increases across the board. All right, so let's see if there are any questions. There is one question. Presumably, gold miners are not going to be allowed to go down to gold mines due to contagion, and maybe gold will become more scarce. Can the virus pandemic impact the Bitcoin ecosystem in any way? Well, I mean, right now what's happening with gold is that there is a significant demand for gold coins. This is from retail, not necessarily commercial, because they need to liquidate. If you look at spot prices versus like the coin prices are way higher because they can't print that many. And a lot of the Swiss vaults, for example, that do the coin printing, they can't operate right now. As far as like further up the supply chain, the actual gold mining companies, as far as I know, a lot of them operate in Africa and so on. I suspect that they're still operating. I don't think the restrictions there are quite as severe as they are in, Asia, US and Europe. But as far as the Bitcoin ecosystem, could the pandemic impact it? Well, I mean, it's in a sense already impacted it because of the economic disruption. But as far as like data centers and manufacturing and so on, I suspect that there's at least some of that already happening. If you are a mining manufacturer, for example, and you're in China, well, you might not have any workers to actually work any of this stuff. So it's possible that's happening. It's hard to really know because we're not really hearing from those people. Data centers that are running these, they can more or less run on their own, and you don't need that many people there. I mean, there are mining machines that need repair and so on, and there are technicians that are probably working on some of those, but and maybe they're not around. But mining hash rate went down more from an economic incentive thing than because of the coronavirus, I think. All right, what does the Fed do when nothing works? Do you think they have a plan B? One of the things that I tweeted, which I didn't share, which was that, like, the next step for them would be purchasing open market operations, not just around mortgage-backed securities and treasuries, which they've been doing since 2008, but expanding that to equities or bonds or other stuff. Right now, they're taking them in exchange for loans. And they tried to do this with mortgage-backed securities, but if they found that people just wanted to dump these securities rather than get loans against it. So I think that's pretty much the next step is purchasing those. And if that doesn't work, then they'll probably go towards negative interest rates to pump even more money into the economy. It's also possible that they'll be going and doing something even more crazy, like, I don't know, buying foreign securities or whatever. These are all on the table at this point. I think the Fed is really scared, and the market is scared that the Fed is scared, because they're at least if you look at the markets, the S&P 500 like dropped as a result of this news that there's pretty much infinite QE, and that's because they don't think this is enough. The contraction that's coming from all of these businesses that are going to be defaulting on their loans and so on, it's going to be massive. The economic disruption right now is massive. I don't know how many businesses actually survive. It's going to be kind of like pre and post 9/11, right? Like, there are just some businesses that are going to go away, and you're not going to know that they went away until many months later and so on. All right. Is Decred's governance model still on track for building new features? I have no idea. I don't pay attention to them. All right. Hopefully that answers all of your questions. Again, pound that like button, subscribe if you want more of this content. I am going to try to do more of these videos now that I'm stuck at home and for as long as this thing lasts. Anyway, fiat delenda est. This song is done.